Contenders, ready! Gladiators, ready! Three, two, one! The Gladiators!
Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the GladPod in association with Gladiators TV. I don't always make reference to which episode number it is, but I'll explain more in a bit. I'm David Blackmore, and joining me this week as a guest co-host, welcome Vogue.
Woo! How exciting. Thank you for having me and inviting me. I feel very honoured to be asked.
Well, thank you so much for stepping in, because producer Paul and Jet Dye, they're away this week. Not together, of course, but they're enjoying some well-earned R&R after what's been, I know it's been a really busy time for both of them. So it's great, Susie, that you're able to join me this week, because the feedback from your podcast, which seems like a lifetime ago now, was phenomenal, and I'm sure that there'll be GLAD fans listening now going, yes, what a result.
Oh, that's so cool. I love that. But yeah, no, it was brilliant. I got lots of lovely feedback as well, and it was such fun. And as you know, I like to talk.
And it's interesting, actually. So we have had some fantastic feedback on our Apple's iTunes. We've had like 5 out of 5 star ratings. It's great to see it. We have, however, had like a 2 rating, and producer Paul was like, oh no, this is the end of the world. We've had a 2 star rating. And I went and read it. Basically, the complaint was that you weren't the main presenter on there. So I'm starting to wonder, was that you, Susie?
Thanks, it was my mum. No, it wasn't really. No, whoever that was, thank you. It's very, very kind of you. But obviously, Di and producer Paul and David have been doing a darling job of bringing you the GladPod every week. So I'm just very happy to step in as a sort of, yeah, stunt stand-in, I suppose, for the GladPod whenever needed.
So looking back, just back reference into your episode, did you enjoy listening to it, or did you cringe, or how did you feel when you listened back to it?
Do you know what? Actually, okay, because I obviously have my own podcast. I'm used to hearing the dulcet tones of my voice replayed back to me many times. I've got used to it. It's weird when you hear yourself back. But yeah, no, it was good. And it was what was really fun was hearing all the clips and all the added extra stuff that you and producer Paul, I love you call him producer Paul, it's very important job. Have put on, you know, the stuff that involved, you know, Mark, you know, my husband, who was a contender, and little snippets and actually from the show. So, and what I really love is the outro bit, because that's really fun, you know, because I haven't heard you and I discussing, talking. It's like having someone talk about you when you're not there, but in a nice way.
Yeah, I was going to say that, actually. I mean, first of all, it's all producer Paul who digs out those clips, and they really are an added bonus to the show, because it kind of transports you back. And obviously, we don't play them live to you, so you don't always hear them all, because, you know, we don't know how the conversation's going to go. So that's why it's always useful. So I'm glad you like those. And I did actually make a note to ask you about the outro, because it's like overhearing a conversation when you're not in the room, so you get to hear what kind of both Di and I thought of the chat. And clearly, because you're obviously, you know, guest co-hosting, we didn't say anything too bad to offend you.
No, it was all very, very nice, and actually, yeah, fun. And actually, I think, you know, for me to have an opportunity to be more myself, I think, you know, I've grown into myself or whatever it might be. When I was on the show, you know, I think we talked about this on the podcast as well, you know, it's all very serious and you don't really quite know how to be, or you just end up like following others who've, you know, were there originally. You don't quite know what your character is, no major direction. So actually to sort of hear that, you know, you did okay and you did the right thing and people respected you for what you did is lovely. It's brilliant.
So did the kids listen to the podcast?
They have listened to elements, little snippets on the whole thing, not the whole thing, but they have listened to it. You know, it's like, oh God, so embarrassing, Mom. So embarrassing, you know, coming out with those silly stories, and obviously, you know, with their dad and mum being featured at some point as well. It's, you know, they're teenagers, so everything's embarrassing for them that we do, which is our job. Hurrah!
That week as well, you know, I do feel now for all of our podcasts, there is definitely kind of that, it's a kind of your week in the spotlight, really, because we play some of the clips as well from the show. Did you feel quite a lot of the GLAD fan love that week?
Oh, massively. There was a huge resurgence, I think, of interest in from, you know, other people that, you know, I've got to know more recently, obviously know that I did it, but hadn't really understood the sort of the love, I suppose, that comes with being on Gladiators from all the fabulous people who were massive fans and still are of the show at that time. So, friends friends of mine, you know, like when I did my own Wonder Woman Wednesday live on Instagram, you know, and lots of the Gladiator fans were popping on there and asking lots of questions. Some of my friends were like, who are all these people? You know, who are they? I don't know who they are. You know, so that was really fun, you know, and actually reconnecting with people that, you know, perhaps you haven't really had any contact with because, you know, been off from the show for so long. So yeah, it was like a little reunion. It was brilliant.
The Wonder Woman Wednesdays, as I've been tuning in. I think they're fantastic. And I think because, you know, we'd met, we've had that, we've spoken about your journey and we've got to know each other, I definitely think it adds a bit more to watching. Obviously, you had some gladiators on as well. So I think that added more to it. But actually, 2020 for you has been... This could be a platform for you because obviously I know you've got the Vogue and the Viking podcast as well, but you've got a new project coming up, which I was really excited about because it's top dogs and they're humans. So how did this all come about?
Yeah, exactly what you've just said. I mean, the lockdown for a lot of people obviously has been extremely traumatic and it has been horrible for a lot of people in a lot of reasons. And I've been very lucky. No one's been ill. No one's been hugely affected by it locally to me other than businesses I know that have folded. So for me, actually just having some time at home, not having to be rushing around doing kids drop-off and all the logistics and all the normal mum stuff that I have to do. It's just given me a bit more time to focus on things that I've always wanted to do or pursue and actually get them off the ground for a proper project, if you like. So the Top Dog thing came about really just, you know, the Wonder Woman Wednesday, the Vogue and the Viking, they're all things that I can do quite easily. And then I thought, actually, I really love to do something with dogs. I have two rescue dogs. Dogs are a big thing of mine. I love them. And I thought, actually, it's a brilliant thing to have people who are dog owners love their dogs and love to talk about their dogs. You know, you have a dog, you meet dog owners in the park, everybody tells you their life story through their dog. So that's sort of where I want to go with it. And that's what we've got planned. We've got some great guests already lined up for the first series.
So when is like the launch for you and how can people keep up to date with what's going to be happening next with this?
There's two ways. Obviously, I've got three Instagram sites, but the main ones is Susie Cox Live is my own one and stuff that I'm doing, some voiceover work and other stuff that I'll be doing soon. And then the Top Dogs and the Humans Instagram site and also the website. So there's just got a web holding page at the minute, topdogsandthehumans.com. And there's a sign-up sheet on there so they can sign up to all the news information and also the chance to be entered to come to the launch party, which is the most important bit, obviously, which hopefully will be happening about mid-October. Date to be confirmed, obviously, depending on what's happening in the world. But it may be an online party or it may be a real party. Who knows?
There you go. Yeah, online parties have had like almost burnt out in the end because people have all been for it during lockdown. And now that it's started easy again, people have sort of been turned off by it. But one thing that people haven't been turned off by has been the Glad Pod. And this is going to be the penultimate episode of this first series. So we're going to end on 12 episodes. And I know I was saying to you, Susie, when we spoke to you afterwards, I was sort of toying with the idea of what number of episodes I'm going to have in each series. And it's just been a constant dilemma for me. Like, do I go for 10, 13, 15? I was looking at Netflix series. I was looking at the podcast I listen to. Everyone seems to have different numbers. And I know producer Paul, I was driving him mad with going, well, do we have this number or this number and this number? And in one day, I just got connected all the dots together and I realized that there were 12 original gladiators, so that felt like a good number. But one thing that obviously, you know, Susie, you've not had with us on the podcast is obviously with our intros we always delve into our mailbag. Would you like to see what I can put out this week?
Yes, do it. It's like all iconic 80s TV shows, they had a mailbag and with actual letters in envelopes in. I mean, that's where our fan mail, that used to come via actual paper letters, which was incredible.
Yeah, I always refer to it as the mailbag, but they are all emails. And just so everyone's clear, I don't print them off, then put them in a bag to then pull them out. I just go through the emails. I flag them and then put them into a folder and then take it from there. But Dougie was the first one that caught my eye this week. He said, can we get a Gladpod episode with Falcon? She was my all-time fave and seems to have disappeared now. Do you have any information on the whereabouts of Falcon, Susie?
I don't personally know. I mean, again, she's someone who's such a lovely human being. She was one of those gorgeous gladiators who was incredibly strong and powerful and competitive in the arena. But when you're practicing, she'd almost apologize if, you know, she hurt you. She'd be so sweet and go, oh, so sorry. But yeah, I'd love to see Bernie again. I'd love to see what she's been doing and where she is. So if anybody does know, write in to the Glad Pod they need to know.
Absolutely. And Eamon, I think we may have used a comment of yours before, Eamon, but you sent us a lovely, lovely email following the episode last week with Shark, saying how much you loved it because and how much you've enjoyed every episode so far, which is very kind of you. Because, and this is the thing that I hope that everyone listening to does. He has taken something different that continues to grow his love for Gladiators and its stars, which, you know, Shark wasn't a gladiator. I mean, he was in name, but he just never quite got it onto the live show. So it was a bit of a tangent for us. It was something a bit different, but I'm so glad that you liked it. And I do like, and I know that Metin does listen to the podcast, and I know that he's going to be delighted that you now consider him to be a bona fide gladiator. And yes, Eamon, thank you for your suggestion as well. I would love, he says, more than anything else, for you to get contender Pauline Oliver on the second series. She's still, in capital letters, iconic amongst the fans to this day for many reasons, not least her grudge match with Nightshade. I think Pauline would be a good guest.
Oh my gosh, there's so many, isn't there? That's the great thing about the show. There's so many people out there who are either on the show, fans of the show, gladiators, whatever, behind the scenes. You've got all the, you know, I mean, this could go on forever, David. You realise you're never, ever going to be able to stop doing the GladPod. There are so many people who are involved in that show that could talk about it in being, you know, who are involved in it, whether behind the scenes, in front of the camera, whatever. I mean, there's always iconic contenders, aren't there? And some always stick in your mind. And I can still remember exact games that I played against particular contender, female contenders as well, what happened. But yeah, a grudge match against Nightshade, I think that's just asking for a conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great, guys, please. I'll remind you of all the details in a minute of how you can get in touch with us. But do keep the suggestions coming, because it certainly helps producer Paul as he's working his way through putting up the kind of the wish list for series two. The final letter from our mailbag this week's from Mark. He has met two gladiators on three occasions. Let me just go through it. So he was 8 when he signed up to a sponsored fitness challenge. He only signed up because he knew that Cobra was the guest VIP. And who wouldn't, knowing that Cobra was going to be there? And anyone who entered and raised money could meet him and get a photo. When it was his turn to have a photo, he wasn't rushed. And, you know, Cobra spent time with his, which I think epitomizes Cobra. He's not someone who takes his celebrity status lightly. Cobra took his time to chat. It was like meeting a god because I was such a huge gladiator fan. He was really down to earth. I asked him how I could get as big as him because I was so skinny, and he said, eat loads, eat eggs every day, and loads of veg. It inspired a lifetime passion with fitness, and now I have a PT business and coach boxing. And I know it's something that we talk about quite a lot on the podcast, and I think it's something you talked about as well, which is having that you inspired people to set their lives on careers that they now have and the life that they now enjoy because of how wonderful you were meeting those GLAD fans, weren't you?
But I think, yeah, exactly that. And that's a really, you know, lovely story. And there are many like that, fortunately, that we had great positive influence on, you know, children at that time. It's almost like they're meeting, you know, it's like if you get a really good teacher at school, they can really influence your decision making later on in life. And I think if you do sort of see the gladiators as sort of your heroes and your, you know, I suppose your inspiration, and the way that we were training and eating well and, you know, whatever, you know, we were passing across to the kids who we met. I mean, I recently had a photo sent to me of a very young boy, probably a similar age, about 8 years old, with me at a PA that I was, you know, crouched down. I would imagine it was probably when I first started on Gladiators. He's then followed everything I've been doing recently and found me on Instagram and, you know, tuned into my shows and stuff. He's now a very strong, grown man.
Yeah, well, actually, and talking about meeting people, meeting you, Mark also says that in the same year he got to meet you because his youth club took us to a panto in Portsmouth. Can you remember doing the panto in Portsmouth?
That was my very, very first panto, actually, down in Southsea in Portsmouth. So yeah, I didn't really know what I was doing. I think I was fairy godmother or something, which was totally inappropriate probably for me.
And I can't remember if you remember this, but I'll just share Mark's story. So he had backstage parties, and he can remember Vogue had the biggest smile. She was so friendly. The other children had paper for her to sign, but I didn't. So Vogue signed my arm, and said that I wasn't allowed to ever wash it off, which is something I can definitely hear you say. That night, my mum made me have a bath and I was heartbroken. I'm sure you probably can't, but that's definitely something you would say, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I remember, you know, finding all sorts of various body parts on people at some point. But yeah, on the children's suite, I mean, bless him. I feel really bad and I feel like I'd send him a photo to make up for the gazillion years that have passed of his arm, having to wash his arm. Can you imagine? I mean, absolutely heartbroken. I can imagine my children doing that when they were little, you know, something that they thought they were going to keep forever and then it's washed off. I feel bad now.
Well, do you know what, Mark? I'll drop you an email and we'll get your address and then Susie can send you something. And also there's one person that I wanted to give a big shout out to last week, and that's Dan Barnes. Now, I'm sure some of you have seen on social media, he's illustrated literally every single UK gladiator, including like three unseen gladiators in Shark, Destroyer and Eclipse from Sky One, as Slink characters. He has put in so much effort. If you haven't seen them, you know, he's put them all together into sort of one graphic that has been shared on various social media platforms, and they do look cool. So we, and I'm speaking to producer Paul about this, Gladiators TV, we're going to be putting them on our social media pages this week as well. And obviously it would be remiss of me not to signpost you budding artists listening out there. If you've got fan art, post it on social media this week, tag Gladiators TV or use hashtag GladFanArt, which I didn't say correctly when I was rehearsing this earlier on, and producer Paul is going to sweep them all up. Yeah, and if you would like to get in touch with the GladPod and share your stories, as so many of you have done already, send an email to gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. That email again is gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. Now, I know, having spoken to producer Paul, that we've caused a bit of confusion about the mentioning of another email address, which I'm not going to give you now. Both work as it ends up in the same mailbox, but I think just for cohesion, given that, you know, it's all going through Gladiators TV, that is going to be the email address we use from now on. So gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. Don't forget that we're also on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at The GladPod. And the whole purpose of you being here this week, Vogue, is to guest co-host with me as we speak to a very special guest. I don't actually want to give too much away. The only thing I will say is that it's the first time we've had a non-studio chat. We couldn't get John into the studio, so we made it work through the wonders of today's technology, that we were all in different locations and we were all able to speak. So we tried our best. Hopefully you can just sit back, listen and enjoy some wonderfully wise words from the man that I mention on the podcast every single week. Are you ready for the podcast with John Sachs?
3, 2, 1.
This week on GladPod, I'm absolutely delighted to be welcoming a very, very special guest. He was the voice of Gladiators. He's someone we mention every week on GladPod. We certainly hear enough of him on each GladPod episode. And I know he's someone so many of you Glad fans wanted to hear from. It's John Sachs.
Hello, David. Pleasure to be here.
Well, no, thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the GladPod. Now, John, can you believe that it's almost been 30 years since that first series?
Yeah, I know. It's a different time, really, isn't it? It was a lifetime away. Best not to think about it in terms of years.
Yeah, you're probably right not to think about it too much in years, John. But I am going to take you back to those early 1990s now. So cast your mind back. And for me, where I wanted to start was just getting a bit more of a background as to what you were doing career-wise at that time, because for a lot of these gladiators it was their big break. But was it your big break in terms of your career, or was it just a continuation, like another job for you to do on your career journey?
I left Capital Radio, I think I was on Radio 2, and I just set up a couple of businesses, a talent agency and a voiceover agency. So I was pretty busy at the time.
So John, when did you first hear about the plan for Gladiators to come to the UK? Was it Nigel Lithgow? Because Nigel Lithgow seems to be involved in everything in TV at that time.
100% correct, Vogue. It was Nigel Lithgow. So I went out for lunch with Nigel and Brian Connolly to Clifton, and we got absolutely mullered, and Nigel was talking about Gladiators. And I said, oh, I watched that on a Friday night on LWT. It was the American version by Samuel Goldwyn, but it was a really cheap production. They had actually had a cardboard audience, and all the shots were very tight, so you wouldn't have any expansive sets. It was just some bloke walking around and sort of moving things. So, but it was still had something about it, and I was a fan. And I said, oh, I've got to get involved with that, Nigel. Anyway, cut a long story short, I ended up writing the first series with Colin Edmonds, and we were kind of feeling it out, because when I actually got to Birmingham and started to try and narrate it, it actually was impossible, because when you looked at the people who were climbing up a wall, whose art is that? You couldn't actually, is that Wolf? So in the end, we decided that it had to be a narration.
And yeah, that was one of the questions I was going to ask you, John, actually, and forgive my ignorance here, but how did it work in terms of putting the commentary onto this? You referred quite a few times to being up in a commentary box, but in my mind, I'm thinking, say, take the first series. So that series was recorded, and then you would commentate on the show as you watched it, or did you then watch it and script some things and then commentate on it as if it was live? I just wanted to try and get my head around the process of how that worked.
Well, we tried to do it live. I mean, like I said, I went up to Birmingham and very quickly John K. Cooper, Nigel and myself realised that it just wasn't going to work in a live commentary situation. They had 15 cameras all over the place. They had lip cams, head cams, all sorts of cams. It was impossible to know which cameras they were switching to and where they're going to pick the action up. Is it a wide shot? Is it a tight shot? So in the end, what would happen is they'd record it, cut it, and then Colin and I would sit down at my house and literally play it back and write it. And then we'd go into the into LWT, into the dubbing suites, and we would do it all in post.
Claire will have the Phoenix flying up behind her. A wink and a smile. Thank you. That actually belies this powerful frame of our bodybuilding champion, who represented Britain in the Miss Figure Universe this year. Homing in on Rosie is the Jets, the pride of the Northeast.
Yeah, and I think actually when it comes to commentators, I think people don't give you guys enough credit in terms of the skill set that you have, because actually when it comes to the facts and figures and getting all that information out in a short period of time, a lot of it comes to, you know, there's a lot of preparation work that goes for it. So take football commentators, you know, building up to the game that they're going to commentate on, they'll spend the best part of a week looking up all these different facts and figures. And obviously you can tell the ones that have done the best research, because they're the ones that come out of, every time someone touches a pass, they essentially know what that fact or figure is going to be. And actually one thing that I noticed that you used to always do quite a lot on any of the events is that you'd always comment on the gladiator's record. So what I wanted to know is, was it you keeping track of who won and lost, or was it somebody else? I just want to work out how you managed to keep track of all these records.
Well, we have a Bible, so we know everything that's happened in previous weeks. We keep it updated, and we write it into the script. So I can't claim to be John Motchen, who remembers every stat. I actually wrote all of that, so it was absolutely factual correct.
Now, I noticed in one of the early episodes, there's actually a shot of you in the arena looking down on the action. So I was just wondering if that was a one-off, if it was deliberate, if it was kind of a way of making it look like you were at the arena for each of the episodes, so a bit of poetic license.
Yeah, it's all staged, really. As I think I went up for quite a few series because I had young kids at the time, and they loved going up and meeting all the gladiators and getting pictures taken with them and autographs and all that. So we always used to go up, and it was nice because I got to sort of hang out with them and get to know some of the personal backstories to the gladiators, so that I could make it a bit more personal. And towards the sort of middle of the series, I actually used to get people like Wolf to come into the dubbing suite and create, you know, a bit of nonsense. And, you know, he'd have a go at the other gladiators and grumble a bit, and then off he'd go again. So to all intents and purposes, it appeared to be live. You know, that's the atmosphere we tried to create.
Well, I think even today, you know, some people will watch Gladiators and think that you're commentating live. And I think it was just the way that it was packaged and the way that it was scripted and the way that it was delivered. I mean, you had to do it as if it was live to build the drama, didn't you?
No, it wouldn't have. And it had to appear like it was a live commentary. And that's why you get all the stumbles. I mean, I wouldn't just read it. It would all be the Jimmy Nike emotion, you know, the peaking and then the troughs. And the excitement, oh my God, what happened? And it's just sort of spontaneous, but it's not. It's all written. I'm a good actor.
But the Rebels coming over the hill with grim determination. Celia crabbing left, but Rebel with giant strides. And I don't mean big trousers. Celia heading for the south. Rebel responds. That pink flag firmly in her sights and in her hands. Zeroes in to ensure 0 points. Rebel's speed on the sphere spectacular. Anticipates where Celia might be, moves in, and flags her down in an instant.
And John, did anyone, like, you know, Nigel, anyone give you a brief for the how, you know, the tone of your script? Obviously, you've said there's scripted work that you did, or was it just left up to you to make it comedy or just work your own magic?
Well, they left me to it, really. And I had an idea of how it should be, having watched the American series, and then took all the best bits from all the best commentators and created this gladiator commentator, which was just something that came very, very spontaneously.
You mentioned a bit earlier on that Wolf would come into the dubbing studio with you, but I heard that Saracen would join you as well.
I think he might have. I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of them would be in the building at some times at LWT, and we just grabbed them and just squeezed them into it. Don't forget that everything was perfectly timed, so if I brought them in, I'd have to lose some of the commentary to work them in, or we kind of work it so that it didn't interfere with the narrative. It was quite complicated, but yeah, it was fun. I had quite a few of them in there. I can't remember who. I know Wolf, because Wolf was always coming in.
So come on then, John. What was Wolf like in the dubbing suite with you? We've seen him on set. We know what his character's like. But what was the real Wolf like?
Oh, anyone who knows Michael, he's just the nicest bloke in the world. I mean, that's he got it. Michael knew from the get-go this was Panto. And that's why he created this character, pulling their trousers down and having a crack at everyone. But in real life, he's the sweetest guy. I met him recently in New Zealand. Went over and he insisted that he'd take us out for dinner. He paid for it. It was so lovely to see him. He's doing really well. He's got some gymnasiums out there. He's got a fabulous family. His son's a writer. He's still with his lovely wife. And Michael was an absolute gem to work with, a real pro.
And Wolf, with his wheels partner Cobra, oh, pushes him. Good team spirit there. Cobra says, "Where's my agent?"
It's meant to be a team, though.
You know our Wolf beat. He never did play by the Queensbury rules.
Bad sportsman. Very bad sportsman.
Oh! Mind you, steady as that camera's been all night. The great thing about Wolf, grannies, small children, cheerleaders, everyone gets the same treatment. After our first event, Brian 12, Steve 3.
Something else that I've always thought, John, in terms of your commentary and your commentary style, you very often used to say that a gladiator or maybe a contender told you something earlier. Now, because you mentioned earlier about people being in the same building, so you'd be able to meet them and see them. So did they tell you all of these things, or was it, again, a bit more poetic license?
I would say that it's probably 75-25, because I was up there quite a lot of the time, so I had a lot of time to talk to the contenders, as well as, you know, John Anderson, and get some tidbits off the gladiators. So I did my sort of background work, and I kind of built that into it just to make it a little bit more personable. The more you know about the characters, the more that you invest in them. That's an old kind of film trick. So we just wanted them to have a better backstory, you know, wanted to get to know their nature and to understand what that character has done to get there. I mean, standing on a podium 10 foot up across from Warrior or Shadow is a pretty imposing sight with a pugil stick. I mean, you take Kahunis to go and do that, and what on earth possessed you to do that? You know, I was fascinated why these people put themselves through this.
Yeah, we actually, just talking about Jewel there, reminded me of a clip we played of you commentating the other week, where you're saying how the contender is kind of shaking their head as they're sort of standing across from Shadow, and you could see people are generally scared about being up there with him.
Yeah, who wouldn't be? I mean, if you actually look into Shadow's eyes, there's nothing there. It's like looking into hell. He was huge and pretty well undefeated for a long time, and then people got a bit cute and they realized his sense of balance of gravity and all the rest of it, that if you went down low, chop his legs away, that he'd actually go down. If you try to hit him in the head, forget it, he'd just bounce off or the body. But the legs, they discovered, was the way to take Shadow down. But he was probably the most successful on Duel.
Contender ready. Weininger may shake his head, but there's no going back. There's a big angry gladiator with a pewter stick 16 inches away on the other platform.
And you're actually, sorry, John, I've raced a bit ahead of myself here. I just want to go back to kind of the end of the recording the first series. So, you know, it's all been recorded, it's all gone through mixing and dubbing, and it's ready to go. What did you think at that time of the chance of Gladiators being a success?
Well, it was nothing like it, and they'd invested a huge amount of money in this series. I mean, the hotel bill was 600 grand. Now, this is 30 years ago. The sets were 2.5 million. The show was like a kind of blockbuster film. They put everything into it. And, of course, there was the license to Samuel Goldwyn and so forth. So it had everything thrown at it. It was spectacular. It was in big arenas. They left nothing to chance. I mean, it looked completely different to the American version. And the excitement was there. The characters were there. They were very carefully chosen, each one for their personality. And of course, the names were fantastic. I mean, I think Nigel probably picked most of them. But they were just wonderful superheroes. And that's what people want. They want to see their heroes in action and knocking the bejesus out of people.
Yeah, well, and therefore it sounds like yourself and maybe other members of the team weren't surprised by the success. And actually, it had to be a success given all the effort that went into it. I mean, it wasn't just a case of taking the American Gladiators and trying to do it in the UK on a budget. It sounds like there was a lot of cash that was thrown at this.
The thing is, when you put a big show like this together, you are taking a risk. Sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, there was a show that came afterwards called Ice Warriors or something, which was a bit of a disaster. They tried to do the same thing on ice and it just didn't work. But then along came Dancing on Ice and they got that right. You know, Torvald and Dean, a panel of judges, celebrities and all. I mean, it's how you can't just go in and throw a load of money at a show and expect it to be a success. You have to very carefully work out what the audience wants. And I think with Gladiators, having the benefit of having seen the American one, they saw that on a small budget, if you could make it look exciting, and there's something about it. And if they blew it up into a big kind of Colosseum, you know, gladiatorial arena, then it's going to be incredibly exciting and the kids will love it. And they did. I mean, I used to sort of look at the audiences and watch the kids. It was like going to a panto. They were there booing and supporting. They had their glad hands and it was a day out. It was really exciting.
Next, it's Rambo's favourite, the rocket launcher. Goes a little low, heads for the cylinder, but it's a hit. Phoenix picked her off. The whistle's gone. But Nikki, delighted with her 4 points. That was so fast. Let's see where Phoenix got her. As she leaves the rocket launcher, she keeps low, but Phoenix wings her arm. Phoenix proving to be a hotshot Top Gun. Looks like she's got a few young admirers in the audience. They salute her with their glad hands.
So, John, did you change, like, season to season on Gladiators, you know, how you sort of spoke or commentated on each gladiator? You know, were you told to be a bit harsher on any of the gladiators in particular or just as it happened?
Again, we were left to it. I mean, Colin Edmonds and myself used to write most of it and we'd be tweaking it all the time. We would try and create that panto atmosphere by, if, you know, if a gladiator was a bit sort of full on, a bit aggressive, then we would sort of build that up a bit. You know, suddenly they become the baddie. But they all had to have a different personality. You know, Warrior was probably one of the bad guys. Wolf was one of the bad guys. Shadow was a bad guy. And then you had Hunter and Cobra, who were sort of good guys, you know, fair play, it's all cricket and all that sort of stuff. So they developed personalities. And the girls too, Lightning and Jet, were fantastic examples and role models. You know, they were fit and intelligent and they were just all had a different personality. But yeah, sometimes we come down a bit heavier on some, but you had to.
And because I remember you started off really nice about some of the newbies, myself included, but then you got a bit harsher. I'm being nice with the word harsh. As each series went on, you know, things that I remember, you know, it's like Nightshade on Danger Zone, you know, face the deadly Nightshade and lit her up like a lampshade. And Panther on Jewel, she couldn't knock a skin off a rice pudding. And, you know, one of my particular pals, Siren, on the wall, she's never caught anybody on this wall. Siren maintains her 100% lost record on this event.
You know, that's a bit of fun. And you can't take these things personally. Remember, it's showbiz. And the whole point of it is you have to inject some humour. So some of those lines, Colin and I would just drop in because it's funny, you know. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, really. And if you don't have those little bits of humour in there, then you're taking it all a bit too seriously. You know, having a show, a light entertainment show, we have to hit a kind of a median, a middle line of creating the drama and the action and excitement, but at the same time injecting humour in. And of course, there were great moments which we were allowed to have a whole sequence, which we it would turn into a comedy routine, particularly Wolf when he went walkabout into the audience, you know, and threaten an audience member and all that. And we just, I hate to use the word, but we camp it up. It would be a bit of nonsense. We used to call it nonsense. And that's basically how we played it. There was nothing personal. We loved all of them. But we just thought, you know, if you can't take this on the chin, you're in the wrong business. You know, it's nothing offensive. It's just meant to be a laugh.
So first up on the duel, it's Cobra against Hunter.
Cobra looking confident, but I wouldn't hold his breath. Hunter has a reputation for knocking the living daylights out of people in this event, which won't affect Cobra because he's got no daylights left.
And John, I know you did the show for so long, but are there any particularly memorable lines or script that stand out for you?
Well, there were some great lines in there, but to be honest with you, the whole process was incredibly pressurized. We had to do two or three shows in a day, and I couldn't remember half the stuff I said. And to be honest with you, I haven't watched Gladiators in years. So I'm not really that. Odd flashbacks, you know, things like Swing Out Sisters comes into my head, all sorts of nonsense. But if I thought about it, I mean, one of my favorite moments, I think, was when Wolf was messing around and he pulled someone's trousers down. It was hilarious. And that just became a whole panto scene. And afterwards, he'd run after Ulrika and what have you. And they were kind of, for me, I liked the visual moments. But yes, we had some great lines. But to be honest with you, it's all a blur.
Phoenix and Flame will make like Tarzan and Jane and block them out of the game.
3, 2, 1.
Swing Out Sisters. They fly through the air with the greatest of ease. Jenny and Karen both picking off in yellow.
And John, you know, the commentary was very much like tongue-in-cheek sort of style, you know, very sort of panto, as you say. Do you think, you know, obviously that worked in the 90s on TV. Do you think it would work, you know, for today's audiences in 2020 and beyond?
I haven't got a clue, to be honest with you. I mean, the last commentary I did was Dancing on Ice. And I did a lot of commentary through the 90s, into the noughties, right up into the, I don't know when the last one was, 2015, 2016. And the style became a little bit sharper, a little less nonsense, but it's very difficult to say. I mean, recently I did a show for ITV, Alan Carr, on the Saturday nights. It was the big game show thing, and it was sort of a nostalgic look back at the 80s, and I guess that's why they use me, and we do all the shows like Take Your Pick, Price is Right, and so forth, of which I actually voiced most of them, and that was why they put me in there. So, and the producer basically briefed me and said, just be you. Whether or not that would work today, I don't know. I haven't got a clue. Don't even think about it, really.
One thing I did wonder, John, did you enjoy it? Was it fun? I mean, surely you would have had to have enjoyed your work in order to have done it for so long, surely.
Yeah, it was very pleasurable. It was a real treat to work on a show like that with such a big budget. Fabulous people, you know, even the sound engineers and everybody involved, you know, they were lovely people. I bump into them sometimes at the BBC, you know, 30 years on, how are you? Yeah, I'm moving next week or whatever, or I'm working on, you know, whatever. And they were a real dream to work with. So, yeah, of course, you're going to look at that. We would do it sort of seasonally and you'd look forward to it. It was very intensive. I just remember I lost a load of weight doing it. It was full on. So it was a great experience. And I have very great special memories.
Yeah, and speaking about memories, are there any standout moments that spring to mind that you can remember commentating on, kind of like imprinted on your mind? I mean, obviously, you must have seen a lot of big injuries as well.
Yeah, I mean, there were some pretty serious injuries. Those Atmospheres, whatever they were, those big cheese graters. I remember Warrior doing his knee in very badly on that. So they had a really good insurance policy, and there were some genuine injuries there, which were pretty standouts. But all in all, they took every precaution that they could, as you do, health and safety and what have you. But it's, again, a very fine line between creating something that is a real challenge versus are we going too far? We all think back to Noel Edmonds and that poor contestant who died on his show. That was too far. That wasn't taking health and safety to the nth degree. I wonder if today they'd get away with it. I don't think. I mean, they've got all these ninja warrior type things, but they're pretty lame. I mean, you're just sort of swinging across a big rubber thing and falling into water. I don't know whether you'd have Atmospheres today. I think that would not be constituted as health and safety. I think a lot of those different games that they played would be homogenized.
Play ball, Mandy on Lightning, tackles the detective. Falcon on Sonya, big takedown. Mandy reloads. Bo, don't just stand there, let's go to it, bring it down, there's nothing to it.
One thing I often wondered, John, was were you ever privy to the fact that some certain gladiators wouldn't be coming back for the next series? So perhaps when you're doing the commentary, you could perhaps be a bit more harsher on them?
I didn't know a thing. I literally used to get a call saying, okay, we're shooting, blah, blah, come up and let's start the process. And then I'd turn up and go, oh, there's some new gladiators. I had no idea. And you know what? It's like any show. They don't really tell you anything until the last minute. I remember doing Dancing on Ice, and it was all very last minute with some of the contenders. Someone would drop out, someone would come in, or one of the pros would drop out, and you just turn up. I don't think anyone really cared, to be honest with you. They just go there and do their job like any other professional. You know, you just turn up. So I wasn't privy to anything. It was very, very tight and controlled by the management.
And talk to me just a bit about how you felt when it all came to an end. I mean, were you sad when Gladiators was all over, or had you felt that perhaps it'd been going for a long time now, and maybe perhaps it ran its course?
Yeah, it just ran its course. I mean, I don't know how many seasons were there. Was it eight? Was it?
Yeah.
So that is quite enough for any show. I mean, there are shows which just stay beyond their welcome. I mean, Blind Date, I don't know how many decades that went on. And I think that those kind of shows, they're fantastic fun. Everyone loves them. But finding a new format seems to be incredibly difficult. And people tend to go back and sort of reconstitute what was successful many years ago. Hence the big game show that Alan Carr does on the Saturday night. But then if you do it right, it can be incredibly nostalgic. But when something's come to its end, it's come to its end, and that's that. We all say thanks and move on to the next job. It's like being in the film business. You know, once a film is wrapped, you're thinking about the next one.
So, John, what impact would you say that Gladiators had in your life then?
Well, I would say that it brought me into the LWT family, which was the lovely John K. Cooper and Nigel Lithgow, etc. And they'd make me do things. So suddenly, from that, I got the Brian Connolly show with Dangerous Brian, and I'd be the interviewer with Dangerous. And then I did some Freddie Starr shows, audiences with and stuff. So I actually did an awful lot. I became part of the LWT family, and that was really enjoyable. It really kind of stretched me, doing things I never thought I would do. And then on camera, because, of course, Gladiators was all off camera, but then I became very much on camera, and it was terrific. Great days.
You mentioned Dangerous Brian. I'm so glad you did, because I couldn't have done this podcast without asking you about Dangerous Brian. It was absolutely hilarious. It still very much makes me laugh today. What were your thoughts on it? It'd be great to hear how you felt about the whole thing. It was very much tongue-in-cheek on tongue-in-cheek, wasn't it?
Well, the funny thing is, yes, it was hilarious, and I won't pull back on this. It's probably one of the funniest things I've ever done. I remember standing in Trafalgar Square, and there was a bloke up a ladder with a paintbrush, and he's flicking white stuff on Dangerous Brian, and I couldn't contain myself. And Nigel was saying, look, we've got to finish this, we've got to wrap this. And I, every 20 takes later, I'm still pissing myself laughing because it was funny. In fact, Brian did, we did a sketch, a kind of a mock-up of Gladiators where Brian would do the course, you know, go up the Travelator and all that in his Dangerous Brian outfit, which was, again, very funny. But we did that up in Birmingham because we used the real set. And literally, Brian and I were out drinking till 5 in the morning. And we had to shoot this about 8 o'clock. And we were so mullered. I don't know how he did it. I mean, I could just about open my eyes and talk. But he had to do this Gladiator course. And, you know, it was incredibly impressive. Let's put it like this.
So come on then, John, tell me, who were your favourite Gladiators? And if you'd be so kind, who were your least favourite Gladiators? I'm sure you're going to do a Bruce Forsyth on me here and tell me that everyone's your favourite. But was there any Gladiators that you had a particular affinity with?
I did like all of them. I thought they were all really nice people. But I'll be honest with you, I think Wolf was my favourite just because he got it. And he was the easiest guy to create the comedy moments with. And so we always got a tremendous lot of comedy out of him. But he was just such a nice guy. You know, he had all the time in the world for the fans. Nothing was too much trouble. I like Jet and Lightning, the intelligent girls, you know, again, really fun, great role models, you know, Diane Udell. What a super role model she was. I liked Hunter. What a nice guy. And I loved Cobra. He was such a lovely guy. You know, a nice chap. And he got it as well. He knew it was all fun and all the rest of it. There wasn't a malicious bone in any of their bodies, really. They were just having fun. It was good.
Both Mark and Adam know they'll be in expert hands unless they're quick about this climb. Saracen and Hunter are superb Gladiator wall stars. And the nightmare begins. Hunter after Adam, Saracen on Mark. Hunter bounds up the wall, and Adam's already in trouble. There's girlfriend Katie, and Hunter actually overtaking the contender. What an embarrassing position for Adam to be in, looking straight into the face of disaster. Hunter flicks him away with one hand.
And so that's obviously your favourite Gladiators, but were there any particular favourite event for you?
For me, the most standout event was Duel. And it was a challenge because literally most of the time it only took 10 seconds before the poor guy fell off or whatever. So you had to pack a lot in to that 10 seconds. And Colin and I used to try and get as much boxing parlay in as possible. Oh, uppercut, left, right. And oh, it's a roundhouse. And we just chop all this stuff in. I don't even know whether half of that stuff was correct, because how could you say that's an uppercut with a pugil stick? But we just sort of made it up, and it was a challenge, because some of them went down in 3 seconds. So what do you do in 3 seconds? I mean, the best ones went on for about 30 seconds, and then you could really relax into it. But for me, Duel was the best. It was the ultimate mano a mano. It's man on man. It was woman on woman. It was a fantastic battle. All the others were fun. Some were really complicated to narrate, but Jewel gets my vote.
Oh, Shadow doesn't stand on ceremony. Straight down to business, working upstairs and downstairs. A tremendous strike rate for a heavyweight. Wayne giving a much better account of himself this time, making some aggressive moves himself. Shadow puts in a roundhouse. 1, 2, 3. Weininger stays a distance. Not only will it be a miracle, he'll pick up 5 points. How does he stay up there? Are his shoes glued? Oh, look at that. Oh, a new chin could look like that. Anyone got a chin opener to get that helmet off? Shadow steps across. Let's face it, it takes a special kind of contender to withstand an onslaught like that.
Okay, so that's your favourite events, but which events were the hardest to commentate on?
Some of the events, like Atlaspheres, you hadn't got a clue who was in what, because they were inside a big metal meshed ball, and you couldn't see who it was. The Atlaspheres should have had numbers on them or something, but they didn't. So we knew who was in there, but it was incredibly complicated. Because you had, at any one time, there's a load of these balls banging into each other. And it was very, very complicated. When I think about it, the wall was quite complicated too, although you wouldn't think that, because we saw them from behind most of the time. So who's backside is that going up the wall? And because all the costumes seem to be the same. So some of them were just very difficult because they were cutting away and there were so many different angles and all the rest of it. So some of them were very complex to do and it used to take ages.
Without knowing the background here, John, I hope this isn't too much of a delicate question for you, but I just wanted to talk to you about the revival now. And I think there's maybe a lot of confusion, maybe a lot of people don't really understand. How comes you weren't commentating on it, and how come Alan Parry got the job? Were you asked?
Quite glad I wasn't asked. I was never asked to do it. And I think, you know what, if you're a producer and you're making a stamp on a show, the very popular thing to do is to make it your own. So let's make this our own. We'll use a different this, we'll do a different that, bring in some different games. And so they wanted to really make a mark. And it's always very difficult when you take something that is really successful and try and do it again. And I learned that from an early age that, you know, if this is the Holy Grail, thank you very much. That was terrific. Move on. But, you know, Sky bought the franchise off Samuel Goldwyn. It ran out and off they went and did their own thing. And I guess I was very associated with ITV. So maybe they wanted to use a Sky commentator or something like that. But I'm really glad I didn't do it.
So actually, did you watch any of the revival?
I watched a little bit and I was sort of, I mean, some of the stuff that they originated was quite interesting. But I guess it was like a fantastic feast, the first sort of series and the eighth series, that I'd had my fill. So I didn't really want to go there again. Wish them all the luck in the world. In fact, I was contacted quite a few times to pick my brains on stuff, which I collaborated with the producers and if they needed anything, I would help. But I can't say that I watched it every week by any means.
Now, the big question, John, is the question we ask all our guests on GladPod. Should Gladiators return?
My instinct is no. As I said, it was the Holy Grail. It was a huge success. You don't get TV audiences like that. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think they could afford to make a show like that anymore, because there just isn't the audiences. I mean, in those days, we were getting, I don't know, 10, 15 million on a Saturday night. Today, they'd be lucky to get 2. So how do you make that pay? The advertisers, you know, then were spending a fortune on primetime Saturday night. But the whole kind of structure of TV now, if you notice, there aren't any big spectacular shows. You know, what they call a spectacular show now would be, you know, taking a bunch of people to Australia and feeding them worms and stuff. So I don't think that they could afford to make a show like Gladiators. And it has a special place in everyone's hearts. We all have warm memories, but leave well alone.
So how about this, John? I've got a time machine and we can go back in time to the early 1990s. Would you come back with me and would you do anything differently?
No, I wouldn't. For me, it's part of a rich part of my life. I'm the kind of guy who always looks forward. I never look back. It's done. And the minute you start pulling things apart and saying, I wish I'd done that, I wish I'd done that, coulda, woulda, shoulda, I don't do that. I only look forward. I enjoy every day and I look forward to doing other stuff. And I'm very happy with what I'm doing now. That was then, this is now.
And what are your lasting memories of Gladiators, John? There's so many, obviously, over such a long period of time, but there must be something that is really, really, really sort of stands out amongst everything else.
Oh, all the silly things that went on. It was always funny watching them eat, because they had these little Tupperware boxes and the stuff they ate, they used to eat every half hour. So it'd be like not raw chicken, it'd be cooked chicken with no flavour whatsoever and broccoli, and it stunk. So when we go into canteen, I'm there with a great big egg and chips or a pie and chips, and they'd be there with these little boxes of pet food or rabbit food. But, you know, the stuff they had to do, I'm not revealing any tricks, but before going into a filming moment, they would have had their food. They would have done probably 20 push-ups to tone up the muscles so that the muscles would stick out, little bit of baby oil, and they were good to go. So it was all that palaver that went on. But that's showbiz, isn't it? We use that technique in film now. I mean, I was shooting something the other day and one of our actors, Sam Claflin, got him in shape. But before we did a sequence where he took his top off, a director made him do 30 push-ups and, you know, sit-ups and the whole thing so that he looked toned. when we shoot. So this is all the nonsense that goes on. People don't look like that. I mean, come on. You know, this is showbiz. This is all the behind the camera malarkey that goes on.
John, thank you so, so much for coming onto the Glad Pod and for sharing all your stories and taking that step back in time to reflect on what must have been a wonderful time for you, a wonderful 8 years. It's been great to hear your stories. But for now, John Sachs, thank you very much. So there you have it, Glad fans. John Sachs on Glad Pod. I have to be honest, I've wanted to get him on. He was top of my list pretty much from the sort of the non-gladiatorial side of things. And I have been chasing and chasing to get him on the show. And it was a bit of a roller coaster, but we got it and we got him on. And I'm just so pleased with the chat. He was so relaxed. He was so good and came up with some really good nuggets. But yeah, Vogue, for your first interview as well, he was a good chat.
Oh my God, just hear it. As soon as he opened his mouth, it just took me back to Gladiators shows 100%. You know, and even before that, because obviously I'm a little bit older than you, David, just a smidgen. And I actually did listen to him on Capital Radio. That he started out on. And then I don't remember on Radio 2. I was probably too young to be listening to Radio 2. It was too cool. Now I'm not cool. I've listened to it. But so his voice immediately is just that iconic voice that you heard week in, week out on obviously the Gladiator show and many, many other obviously outlets when he was doing voiceover work or commentary or whatever he was, you know, he's been doing. He's worked in the industry for such a long time and such a true pro when it comes to voiceover and commentary work. So yeah, it took me straight back there. I felt 23 again.
There was one question I wanted to ask quite a few times during that. Whenever he mentioned American Gladiators, I wanted to come in and say, he was basically saying that the British, the UK Gladiators was better than the American Gladiators. Because he kept mentioning the fact that they took the positives from the American Gladiators and then kind of did it on a much bigger scale. And I wish, I mean, I think he probably would say that it was better than the American Gladiators, which I'm not sure. I didn't watch the American Gladiators, so I can't really tell. And I'm sure there are lots of Glad fans that would be able to email in to say whether you think that's right. But it was interesting how he was talking about how it all came together and also how involved he was in that process. And definitely, I think another thing that he would have ticked a few boxes with in terms of answering people's questions is just about the commentary. Now, I think, you know, Susie, you and I working in kind of the media TV world kind of get an understanding that so much is done in the edit suite as well. And it wasn't a surprise that it was. And I think, you know, your question about what was the brief, were they told to say things or was it up to them? And it seems to be that it was like a bit of a collaborative effort, but essentially it was up to John to add that magic. And actually, when you look back at the shows, especially his early shows as well, you know, his commentary, it is as if it is live, the way he does it and the information he gets in. So, you know, it's a clear example of someone who is a master of their trade.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact of, you know, his voice has its own style and immediately recognisable, but he's just a true pro. You know, he obviously talks about he actually set up his own talent agency and voiceover agency. So, he, you know, from his own perspective, but also understanding how the process works, working with another writer, you know, it was all scripted, but as if ad hoc. It reminds me a bit of Graham Norton sort of doing Eurovision. It's that sort of observational commentary, but with a bit of panto comedy sort of scripted put in as well. You know, it's that sort of slapstick panto comedy with a bit of, yeah, just his own take on it, really. And just like you said, trying to create the drama, trying to create the fun, you know, keep it lighthearted. Yeah, I mean, the US show, I think, you know, I agree with him to a certain extent of, you know, it was a much bigger production. If you look at the US show, especially the early ones, it's a much more smaller scale studio-based, a bit more like the Ninja Warrior type of studio-based, small audience show. You know, our show had 7,000 people twice a day in the arena. Massive production, huge, spectacular, you know, I mean, spectacular, I think was the word he actually used to describe it. And it was, I mean, you know, it became a much bigger thing than the US one, even though they obviously started it. That's my take on it, because I was in it. So obviously it was much better.
Well, yeah. And I think that's probably what we're using, because I looked at what they were doing. I thought, well, do you know what, we can do better. Now, I definitely felt it was interesting, his answer, I thought, for the newbies to Gladiators, maybe giving them a bit of a pat back to start off with and then getting harsher on them going forward. But he was kind of saying, well, no, actually, that wasn't the case. You know, if essentially, if Gladiators weren't, you know, if it was a poor performance, they were sort of he would give it to him both barrels. But then he wasn't necessarily doing that in the early series. So I'm not quite sure if we got perhaps an answer on that. But certainly for you, Susie, you felt that perhaps he was quite tough on a few of you towards the latter end.
Yeah, I think, and it wasn't, I mean, I wanted to jump in and speak, but obviously because we're working on sort of different audios and stuff, it's a bit difficult to just jump straight in and answer him back on that. And obviously it's John Sachs, you know, and I feel like I'm still being told off by him on the show with his commentary. But more, yeah, I didn't take it personally at all, but it was just, I noticed my own and some of the others, possibly, you know, when you first start, obviously, it's almost like, you know, pat on the back, nice encouragement, and they're doing really well, aren't they? Oh, well done them. And then just obviously as you get further onto the show, and again, as he explained, it's to create drama. There's no point saying we're all amazing and we're all great all the time, because that's dull. You know, it's almost like that sort of slightly controversial viewpoint, just to create people to go, no, they're brilliant. You know, when we get the feedback from the show, from the kids watching, and to disagree with him, you know, get that whole interactive panto style audience participation as well from home as well. I imagine from watching in the arena, he talks about being at the arena and being live there, watching the kids' reactions to some things, you know, what's going on and the excitement and drama and everything. And I think, you know, you want to create that to the kids who are sitting at home watching it on the TV as well. You know, obviously if he's being slightly negative, not in a bad way, but just saying, well, Vogue hasn't done as well on this today, or she's a bit rubbish on this today, or whatever, the kids at home are going to go, no, she's brilliant, whatever. Obviously I'm just talking about myself, but you know, any of us, I think. And also I think, do you know what, when it first started, he's probably got a bit bored by the time it goes on a bit later. I mean, trying to come up with new scripts, new ideas, whatever it may be. So, you know, I took that. I just think, you know, understanding that obviously we understood it was entertainment, it was fun, it was a performance, a light entertainment show. It's not sport. It was, you know, entertainment, including sport and activity. You know, I've heard loads of kids trying to swing on lampshades, trying to recreate Hang Tough, or, you know, roll down the stairs, trying to do the pyramid, or whatever they were trying to do, you know, from parents. So kids do try to emulate it at home. So it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure lots of injuries and trips to A&E off the back of that. Now, I also thought it was interesting talking about the revival, and he was very candid with that. You know, he said, I wasn't asked to do it, and also gave a reason as to why they didn't ask him to do it. So I thought that was interesting. Actually, that was one of the big questions I had, that the fact that he didn't do it, even though he did some of the commercial ads up to it. And also the big question, should Gladiators return? His answer was very much, it was very black and white with him. There was no... We sometimes perhaps get a bit of grey, in the sense that people say, well, perhaps it should come back, but maybe in a different format, or maybe needs to do this or that. But, you know, he was very much a case of, well, it was what it was at the time. It was huge. It was successful. You're going to struggle to repeat it again. Actually, he as disappointing as it was, he did make a lot of sense with those points, don't you think?
Oh, 100%. And I have to say, you know, all the chat that's been going, exactly what you've been saying, you know, as disappointing as it sounds to everybody, knowing as he does what it takes to put that show on, and the huge budget, and, you know, to make it the spectacular show that it was, or better than it was, is a really almost impossible task. You know, the reason the show came to its obviously natural end was because then all the reality TV stuff started to come in, and, you know, the voting, which TV companies, you know, make huge amounts of money from. So to put on our show without that sort of formula, I mean, maybe that could be the next way, you know, actually, I think I talked about this on my podcast, it's like real Gladiators, you know, people put their thumbs up, do they live? Do they not live? You know, that sort of vote at home, ring in. I have to say, when he was speaking like that, I did agree with him, as much as I would love something like that to come back on. I would not be wearing Lycra. I would like to be standing with a microphone and doing Ulrika's job. But because we don't have an understanding of the show itself and how it all works. But yeah, I agree with him, you know, the budget, the big shows like that just aren't around at the moment. You know, maybe in another 10 years, possibly, you know, it might all change and go back to how it was originally. But, you know, I agree with him. As much as it is heartbreaking to hear, as, you know, true Gladiator fans as we all are, I just think actually he's actually speaking some truth there, knowing how it will work.
It's been wonderful to have you come on board this week and to guest co-host. And I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
Oh, it's been brilliant. Thank you so much for inviting me. I know it was all quite technically difficult for you to set this up, the interview with John and, you know, us being in various different locations all over Europe. I'm in France at the moment. So actually to connect all the dots and get us all together to speak and get this interview going. And John, you know, John is, like you say, that voice is Gladiators. You hear that voice, immediately you would think of Gladiators.
Susie, once again, thank you so much. And for those of you listening, have Susie and I missed something that you picked up on the show? If you have, it's gladpod@gladiatorstv.com. Don't forget, we're on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at The Glad Pod. I've asked John if he can record us a new outro to end the show each week. So he's going to come up hopefully with something. But for this week, as it is his episode, we're going to end it in the usual way we do, with these very wise words from John Sachs.
Good competition, good spirit, great sportsmanship as both contenders show mutual respect. Join us again next week for the ultimate challenge, the might of...